Okay, I want to welcome everyone to our pre-Pesach class for 2011, 5771. And the reason that I say the date is that some of the information we're going to discuss is unique to the year. And you'll understand over the course of our studies together why I say that. We'll begin. It's interesting, I feel, as I mentioned before, that it's a little bit heretical to speak about Passover while we're sitting with chametz on the table. Because the customs that have evolved about Pesach, we're going to talk about law, but there's also there's no greater holiday that has minhag, that has custom associated with it more than Passover holiday does. In fact, in some Sephardic homes, even though they do eat kidneyos, even though the Sephardic tradition among many Sephardim is to eat legumes, which Ashkenazim do not eat, they don't eat chumis. Now, why not? Chumis is only just beans. It's just garbanzo beans ground up. He says, we don't eat chumis because chumis sounds like chametz. I mean, you can't eat it. It sounds like chametz. Now, what sounds like what? One have to do with the other? Right? What's one have to do with the other? That's the holiness. The Jewish people are so holy that it is that is even the association with chametz. Some have wanted to say that they're not in favor of the fact that there are some places that are selling kosher for Passover bagels. How could you say, Vike Mizoge, how could you say such a thing, a bagel? On Pesach, you don't speak like that. When I met my wife, it's a true story. When I met my wife, we got engaged. By Passover, we were engaged already. And I went to visit, I took her out, and I had a bottle of kosher for Passover Coke. Right? Kosher for Passover Coke. So my father-in-law, right, looked. He was like very nervous. Like, what for a shekitz is this? What for a guy is this? You know, by him he only understood like mayim chayim soda. You know, he didn't understand. He didn't know that the world had evolved since then. Right now, already, you know, he's adapted. But there's a certain amount. Pesach brings with it a tremendous amount of tradition. That is far stricter than actually the halakha at times may be. But that's the beauty of the Jewish people. There are those that have a tradition. My wife's grandparents were from Europe. And they did not, if any silverware fell on the floor, forget about food. If the silverware fell on the floor over the course of Passover, they did not use it. They would not use it. They would put it away till next year, or they would kasher it. Right, they didn't use it. Forget about food. Many have a tradition that if the food falls on the floor, they don't use it. Right, but all of this that I'm telling you is all stricture. This is not even halacha. It's not brought down anywhere like this. These are people when I don't want to use the word overboard because what they're doing is that their love of the mitzvah has evolved that way. But that's not halacha. That's not halacha. We're going to discuss here law.
What about the stricture that you're not supposed to keep more than
As long as you know, okay, beautiful. What Vivian is raising is that you're not allowed to reinterpret God's word. Right?
No, there's a thing that you're not supposed to keep less and you're not supposed to keep more. You're supposed to keep exactly.
Okay, so that idea of not keeping more and not keeping less is only true if you are reinterpreting God's original statement, for example. I'll give you the example, then you understand what I mean. God told Adam, do not eat from the tree. What did Adam tell Eve? Do not touch the tree and do not eat from the tree. Okay, but he said, God said, do not touch and do not eat from the tree. And from there we learn, and the Midrash says that the snake pushed her against the tree, she touched the tree, and the snake said, just like nothing happens to you when you touch it, nothing will happen to you when you eat it. Okay, from there the Gemara learns, that it's only a problem creating a fence around the Torah, is the Torah says you should create a fence around the Torah. You should create for your own a fence around your swimming pool, the swimming pool being the violation, the danger, being the violation of God's principles, and the construction of the fence being that which will protect you from going. And that's actually a mitzvah in the Torah too. So how do we relate these two principles? So what we say is that where the fence is designed, the fence, you have to know the fence is a self-designation. Either it's a rabbinic designation, or it's a personal designation, or a custom designation. As long as you know it's a fence, then you're okay. It's when you start to think that that is, when you start to reinterpret God's word, that does create a problem. That does create a problem. And that's true. Many times the questions that I get is knowing, discerning how to answer that type. Where can you bend and where can you not bend? Right? That's what's very critical, particularly in the area of Passover. I will also add that Passover, more than any other holiday, is critical to have a rabbi that you're associated with. I myself make a habit of reading almost as many Passover guides that are printed around the world as I possibly can, right, to review them. And every guide will share with you different tricks and different principles, because that is the nature of kashering and the nature of kashrus, and therefore it is important to have a rabbi. It's also important that you should not get nervous if you read two different things in two different guides. It's unlike other areas where generally it says pick up the lulav and shake it. It's going to be the same in all guides that you're going to pick up. In terms of kashrus, particularly in the area of Passover, you're going to have different either different explanations what you should do and how you should do it. So all of this is, don't get nervous, because that is normal. We won't go into the backgrounds why that is and what causes that, but you should be aware that that does exist out there. We're going to try to make the kashering as user-friendly as possible based upon experience that we have over the course of the years. We're also going to talk about products and some changes in the industry and products and why you see certain things changing. And Bezrat Hashem, we will try to add in some other areas of interest as well. First is the idea of what should one have in mind when one is cleaning for Pesach. The first thing is that a person has to develop a love for mitzvos, a love for the commandments, and that's critical. It's critical that you have a labor of love when you're doing the mitzvah. Right, a person has to see the beauty of the mitzvah, and that's part of the process. Right, just like one is cleaning out the chametz, the Arizal in the Kabbalistic writings of the Ari, the Holy Ari from the 1400s, 15th century, he would elaborate upon the principle is that as you're cleaning the chametz physically, you should recognize that you're cleaning the chametz internally as well. You have to rid yourself of the negative side of ego. Right, you have to clean yourself out. So just like we have Yom Kippur, which is cleaning yourself out, so too you have Yom Kippur, a different aspect of Yom Kippur is the Yom Kippur of Pesach, right? You're freeing yourself, you're getting off the trappings, right? Interestingly enough, right, by Pesach time often, we have a mini moving process, right? Vivian just moved, so I have no doubt that Vivian probably got rid of 25% of her life was left in Palo Alto. I don't mean her friends, right? Just 25% of her belongings are left in Palo Alto, right? Is it true? 10% of it, not right. Right? That's because she probably got rid of the other before. But basically, is we accumulate junk, right? You accumulate baggage. Now that's true in physical items, and that's true in spiritual items as well. We have baggage, right? And part of Pesach is freeing ourselves from that baggage, and that's what the word Mitzrayim means. You're trapped. Mitzrayim means you're trapped, right? You're held in a noose, and Pesach is about going free, breaking free. Now, while that is true, we have to focus on two points. One is we have to remember what does the law require, and what is our added pressure that we've created on ourselves. Now, Pesach comes in the spring. Now, tradition has evolved, perhaps because of the Judaic tradition, I don't know. There's something called spring cleaning. Spring cleaning. Now, we have to be careful in Judaism not to confuse Pesach cleaning with spring cleaning. Pesach cleaning should occur in the weeks leading up to Passover. Spring cleaning should occur immediately and begin after Passover and continue till fall. What I mean is that there is no chametz in the fact that your garage is in total disarray, right, and you can't find anything in there. The only thing we're concerned about is whether or not you have mistakenly left chametz somewhere in the garage. If your tool chest is not organized, now is not the time to do it, because there is no chametz in your tool chest. Right. Now, all of this, I was going to add, all of this applies to homes that have kids above the age of 10. If you have kids below the age of 10, then you have to look in the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch discusses a different environment. The Shulchan Aruch discusses the environment of rodents. Now, vermin bother us. We shake when we hear the very word of rodents, right? But in the Shulchan Aruch's times, there was a great worry, a real worry, that rodents would transfer food from one area of the house to another area of the house. And that was common. As scary as that sounds, that was a common problem in the old world. I actually had it in my own house. When they were building, they did a lot of the building. All the streets that are around me, to the right of my house, were not there. All those houses were built after I had moved in. And they did 2 years worth of excavation and building. And that brought an onslaught of rodents. We had rodents in the garage for a period of a year. Wow. Right? Until somebody explained to me what it is. And they said they'll never go away till they finish the building. It's just the reality. And they would move stuff around in the garage. I mean, my wife didn't go into the garage for a year. Right? But they would move. You would hear them moving around in the garage. They would bite through cardboard, bite through everything, and eat anything in sight, including cardboard, including negatives. Cameras once came with negatives.
There's no difference between grandchildren and rodents.
Right. No, rodents go away. Rodents go away.
Grandchildren grow up and cost more money.
Right. Okay. So, one should focus, while one is cleaning, one should be connecting with God. And you have to actively think about it, right? Think about that idea, right? That I'm ridding myself of the chametz, right? It's a mitzvah in and of itself. And also to think about the idea, some of the ideas that you're talking about. Where do you have to clean really depends on your personal environment. It really does depend on your personal environment and your personal practices. Your sock drawer in an adult home, right, is probably not going to have chametz in it. I know that sounds strange, but there's very little chance that your sock drawer will have chametz in it, because most people do not eat and go to their sock drawer at the same time, right? And that's actually the case of the Shulchan Aruch. The case of the Shulchan Aruch is that wherever you may enter during the course of a meal, even absent-mindedly, needs to be checked. The case of the Shulchan Aruch is a wine cellar. A wine cellar, and the Shulchan Aruch differentiates between two different wine cellars, right? A wine cellar where the servant would go during the meal, and the wine cellar that's only meant for wholesale use, or, you know, that's meant for major storage, where you don't go during the meal. So one you don't need to check, and one you do. Where you go during the meal, where you're afraid that you might have brought your cracker down, the barrel got stuck, you put the cracker on the counter, on the ledge, and you poured the wine, and you left the cracker and walked out. From there, you learn the rules, right? That if it's a place that you might have brought chametz to, right, then you have to check it. If it's a place that you would never have brought chametz to, right, you do not need to check it. And that's the barometer, right? So if you eat in bed, right, or more likely if one of the family members may eat in bed, then you need to check the area.
And if your sock drawer is immediately below the end table, that's right next to your bed where the cookies,
right, the cookies go. So that's
sure
correct.
It's my sock.
Correct. So that's basically that's the rule that you have to use in your mind, right? Any area that might have had chametz brought into it, even absent-mindedly. But that's the key word. The key is absent-mindedly. If there's no chance, then you don't need to go there. You don't need to check there, and you don't need to go there. So popular areas would be at the shea cases. Right? Often we focus on what the sad issue is, what I found over the years, is people focus on things that they don't need to focus on, and then they leave out the things that are critical. The car is the most important place to check in California, in my humble opinion, is the car. Because we live in the car in California, and I think most of us eat in the car. Right? I don't know all of us, but I think most people do eat in the car, and that's the place that you need to check, and you need to clean. Right? And the checking really needs to be, right, what are you checking for? You're checking for areas that might have fallen, a sizable quantity of chametz might have fallen there, meaning a piece of chametz might have fallen, right? A piece of the cracker, a Cheerio, something that's really noticeable and is practical. You're not checking for breadcrumbs that might have disseminated throughout the air, that might have become airborne, right? What you're checking for is Cheerios and larger. I think that's the easiest way to imagine it. Right.
Cheerio.
Now,
especially have kids.
This is large?
That's very large. That actually, according to all opinions, without exception, everybody would hold that that would be a critical problem. Okay. Now, how do you really... So first of all, is this, you should be, when I say checking, first and foremost, we deal with cleaning. Right? We clean, and then we check. Right, checking is the eve of Passover. We're dealing with cleaning right now. Basically, is this, you need to go through any car area of the car where the chametz might have fallen. Right now, if you're talking about underneath, you don't have to project yourself in a upside down position. Right, check, looking and cleaning underneath the seat. Maybe it got caught in the crack in between the crevice. Right, but basically, is any area that you, in a cursory glance. That you go, if you look at the side of it, you look on both sides, you look a quick glance underneath, but not where you got to go, you know, all the way in areas that your hand and your body would never reach. That will deal with what you do about that later. But basically, any area that is normally seen or normally accessible, that's where you want to focus your energy on, right? Now, you do have an interesting problem with the that's unique to the minivans, right? Is that there are areas that you could see, but you cannot access, right? And that was the way the seats are bolted in. And if you never had a car seat, a minivan, you want to know what I'm talking about. But basically, the seats come out in the minivans. They're latched in. But there are some areas that you could see. You see the hole, but you cannot get to, right? You simply just cannot get to it. So what do you do about that?
Vacuum cleaner.
Yeah. I could not get it out. Let's say you can't get it out. Believe it or not. Right, so you could try that way. Another thing to do is, and this is a trick, is you use anything that could make the food no longer edible.
Soap.
Right? So you could use soap is one trick, or you could use some type of a caustic cleaner. Now, this is different. We're going to talk about Vivian's cleaner, which is to use natural ingredients. Natural ingredients will work for cleaning, right? They will not, there's only one thing that they will not work for, and that is to make the thing non-edible, right? It has to be that the Cheerio is made non-edible, not non-likable, non-edible, right? So if you add vinegar to it, it's not making it non-edible. You may not want to eat it, but that's not the halacha. The halacha is that it has to be non-edible to a dog. Right, so it has to be Windex, something like that. So any time, and this is the trick that you should be aware of, any time you have chametz that you simply cannot get rid of, you have to transform it into a non-edible or a poisonous entity. Right, that's the key. Right, and that's the same trick that we're going to use throughout in terms of the certain areas of cleaning where you're not getting it actively clean. Right, so if you're getting it clean, any cleaner that will clean is good. Right, so if you have, Vivian sent me a number of tricks. One is, I forgot them. I had them in my notes. No, I forgot them. To use vinegar was replacing.
Yeah, I don't remember.
I looked at them and I don't remember. But to try to use all natural ingredients, so you don't have as much chemicals around. That's good. But in terms of certain areas, it won't work. Where you want to make something inedible, you need to make sure inedible for a dog. There you want to make sure you're using something that is indeed caustic. Okay, so you've gone through the different areas. You've vacuumed out wherever you want to vacuum out. You've cleaned out. This is covering all of the areas of the house. Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of right, in terms of as you get closer to the kitchen, and that should be your main focus. The rest of the house, you're ridding the chametz. You're getting rid of the chametz for the Cheerios and larger, right? You go through the couch, you take off the pillows, you vacuum it out, right? You go through. Now, you only need to move furniture that is normally moved, okay? If your furniture is never moved, you do not need to move it for Passover. Right? You don't got to get a moving team or a hernia. It's not critical, right? The only time is, so if you don't normally move the furniture and you don't know that you stashed a box of Oreos underneath the couch, right, and it's a couch that can't be moved, then you do not need to move it. If you know that you put the Oreos there, right, because you were hiding them from your grandson, so then you would need to move the couch because you got to get them back, right, and you pushed them too deep and they went into never space. Okay, but if you don't know, there is a certain amount what you don't know doesn't hurt you when you deal with an area that's non-accessible. If it's an area that's accessible, that would not work. And that's the differentiation there. When it comes, now let's move quickly into the kitchen, okay? Because that is obviously the most critical area, because you then transform yourself from where an area, before Pesach, right, we're going to talk about you've cleaned the best that you could, you've done the best that you could, then the rabbis have created an additional safeguard, and that's called bittul chametz. That's where you nullify any chametz that you know about or you don't know about, meaning you can't get to it, you couldn't do it, you nullify that chametz. And that stops the prohibition from coming upon your shoulders. You've done the best you could, and this is a second way of transferring ownership out of your property. In addition to that, we also sent out the form of what's called selling chametz, right? Which is where you sell your chametz to a non-Jew, right? You sell the chametz to a non-Jew. So you've cordoned off an area, close the cabinet that has the chametz in it. That area is going to be leased to the non-Jew for the course of the 8 days of Passover, and the chametz inside is going to be sold to the non-Jew. Simple enough. Okay, that's one another way that we get rid of the chametz. That's the chametz that we know about, and we want to have to sell it in order to buy it back after Passover. So we've cleaned, we've sold the chametz that we need to sell. We've talked about the bittul chametz. And that bittul chametz, the checking of the chametz in that kit that we sent out to the shul, right? We sent out is you'll have, or on the sheet that we prepared. So you'll see there the declarative statement. We do this checking for the chametz. We search for the chametz around the house to make sure that we didn't leave any chametz in the house. We didn't leave anything. We check around. We do a glance, more than a glance. We do a searching all around areas that we might have forgotten. We check the car to make sure there's nothing there. We check the attaché case, the backpacks, to make sure there's no chametz hidden in there, that we don't have any stashes we didn't know about, right? And then we make the declarative statement both by night and by day. This is all on, now we're talking about the eve of Passover. But let's talk about the most important area of cleaning is the kitchen. The reason for that is because we have a rule that perhaps we might have heard of, that things are batel, which means we have a 1 to 60 rule, the most important rule of kashrus, and that is, or lack of kashrus, and that is that if a drop of milk falls into the chicken soup, right, so the immediate reaction is pour it all down the drain. Okay, but the halacha does allow at times, I mean, you should contact the rabbis so that you don't make an error, but at times it does allow something to be nullified, dissipated inside of 1 to 60, right? And it dissipates itself and it's considered negligible. That is true in areas of Kashrus with the exception of one area, and that is Passover. That rule does not apply to foods cooked on Passover. There is no nullification rule for Pesach. So therefore, if a person takes a Cheerio, or even less than a Cheerio, and mistakenly drops it in to their Passover food on Pesach, out. Not only that, our tradition is that we are strict even if you take a spoon. Let's say you take a chametz spoon by mistake, it was in the drawer, in the Passover, not in the Passover drawer, right? Somebody called me last year, right? They had certain drawers they had taped up. They turned around, someone in the house opened the taped drawer, pulled out by just by rote behavior, pulled out a mixing spoon, put it into the chicken soup that was stirring on the pot, on the stove, and the woman called in a dead panic. Now the truth is, right, that there is nothing you can do for the person. I tried, right, I spoke with other great rabbis, there's nothing you can do.
It was on Pesach.
It was on Pesach. There's nothing you can do, because there is no nullification rule, and there's no, the rule that we use for dishes, that often when people call me with questions, usually I can find a leniency when people call me. That does not, all those leniencies, that whole book of leniencies does not apply to Passover.
So the pot now, Chometz?
Yeah, the pot was a problem. There was a nightmare. It was a nightmare from beginning to end. So therefore, I will suggest two things I learned from that lesson. One is, don't leave in your drawers, right? It's not such a smart thing to leave the normally used drawers that are accessible and absent-mindedly used with Chometz dishes in it, Chometz spoons in it. Because it's by nature, you reach in there 350 days a year, your normal thing is that you may space out, or family members, more likely than the lady of the house, is going to space out, and they're going to reach and do that. So that was one thing that I learned. And the second is, you better cry. No. There is one, interestingly enough, the rule of 1 to 60 does apply before Passover. Right? It does apply before Passover. There was one Rebbe that had a tradition. Right? Again, not something that you should do. But he had, all of his food was cooked before Passover. Because then you have no problem. Because the rule of nullification applies if it's batel before Passover. So it's gone, it's dissipated, and in halacha it would not reincarnate itself. On Passover itself, once the chametz has a unique entity existence, it would remain. But again, so therefore it is important to try much more strict than the rest of the year, and that's why we're going to talk about cleaning the kitchen, that the cleaning of the kitchen is where you should reserve your energy, and there we're going to do a lot of stricture, more than we would find in other areas, because even the crumbs would bother us. It's not the crumbs that they are a violation of Passover law inherently, it's that if they mix in with the food, they would be far harder or almost impossible for us to find a way out of that problem. Yes, Nathan.
I just wanted to say that my system is It's not ecologically friendly. But I take saran wrap, you know, cheap saran wrap, and I cover the drawer, and then I put a sign, do not touch. So.
And then you take the drawer.
So there's a barrier.
Right. There's another way to do it.
I used to take everything out.
There's another way to do it also is you create, and this you really would have to speak to an electrician, you create a shock system attached to all of the doors. And it's really, I was just going to say, like Pavlov dogs, right? They usually, it only takes two or three times. And after that, they stop touching it. It's really an amazing...
Rabbi, yes. do we know why, or did I miss it?
Oh, thank you so much.
Do we know why, or did I miss at the beginning of the class, why there's no nullification and why it is so tough? Because that, in Judaism, for Passover, I mean, I know we're trying to improve our spirit and our, however, that seems to imply that there's no, that we have to reach perfection and that there's no room and all that.
Yeah, very good. Okay. One shouldn't, I just want to make a rule, a statement that you're pointing out, a very strong statement. When we talk about concepts behind law, that should not affect our understanding of the actual law. The law is the law, and the concept behind the law is the concept behind the law. Usually the two do not intertwine with themselves. Right? So you should just understand. In terms of why the laws of Passover are so strict, some are biblical, much of it is rabbinic. Not minog, rabbinic. But generally what I'm talking about is more halacha, rabbinic in law. The reason is because chametz carries with it the strictest of penalties, second only to certain laws. So, therefore, the rabbis wanted to make sure that we back away from it far, far more, and therefore they didn't allow a lot of the law that might normally have been applied.
I misspoke. I meant, why is it so darn strict? That's what I'm saying.
I think is because it's the law that's beginning the creation of the nation, right? Right, this is the formation of our nation. It could be there God wanted to attach a greater amount of detail to it, This again, that's my own interpretation. I can't tell you.
It's really very strict the way it's defined in the Torah itself.
Yes, this is correct. Yeah. I mean, Mary is correct. There's nowhere where you find so many verses concerning one area of law as you do by Passover. Right, you find over and over the Torah repeats itself. Be careful from the chametz. Be careful from the chametz.
Well, I meant what's God's intent is what I meant. Because Shabbos, for instance, is the holiest, and yet we know the rules, but they're not like hammered in. Like Passover is the time of
the
dread,
truth. The truth is, I'll be honest with you, it's funny you mentioned that. If you look at the introduction to the Code of Jewish Law on the area of Shabbos, he writes over there, he says that sadly, most people are not really fluent in the laws as they should be. Right, so your question, I don't know if you could take from the fact that people are not so fluent to say why. I think you have to credit the Jewish people that Passover has been a holiday that has survived the test of time. Right, even I tell you the truth, we invited one of our neighbors is an atheist, proclaimed atheist, this child of a proclaimed atheist. So we invited him over for a dinner, for Friday night dinner. So he kept telling, I invited him, my children invited him. So he said, I'm an atheist, I'm not comfortable, you know. So my son Geshi told him, he says, we're having food, not theology. Not theology. He actually came. Why? Because when my wife invited him, then he finally buckled in and he came. So interestingly enough, so he gave me a whole paper, dissertation, written by his father, on why he's an atheist, or agnostic, an atheist. It was very, very interesting. I told him, I wrote back a card thanking him for, you know, he'd given us gifts, etc. Thanking him, and I didn't want to, I had to respond because he gave me 10 pages worth of notes.
Wow.
So I told him, I said, thank you for the gift, it's lovely having you for dinner, look forward to having you again, etc. And then I said, if you ever would like to discuss the notes, then I'll discuss it. I didn't want to go pull them point by point. That's all. But interestingly enough, I invited him for the Seder. I invited him for the Seder. Chumi invited him for the Seder. So he sends back a thing. I'm going to my stepson's for the Seder. So I wanted to write back. I don't know exactly what that means. I didn't know an atheist could have a Seder. But I guess you know, as much as we think you get the Pesach is Pesach, you know, theology aside, Passover is Passover. So it's, certainly, it's the formation of the nation. It's
Rabbi, isn't it also Chumitz itself, the spirituality? If you look at all the laws of the Beit Hamikdash, and even before that. And there's only one day that chumitz is allowed into the temple.
Good point.
And that was Sukkot. So for whatever reason, only Hashem knows the reason, chumitz has the spiritual, let me put it this way, chumitz, spiritually speaking, is forbidden before Hashem. So that probably has something to do with the laws on Pesach against chumitz, because Pesach, from a sense of spirituality, is probably one of the most important holidays that we have.
But they have a flower offering.
I'll take Al's point. I'll explain Al's point. Al's point is well said. Okay.
Yeah,
it's like this. If chametz, I'll explain to you. 1 minute. Time out.
No, bread.
I'll explain to you.
Only one day.
Okay,
the whole year.
I'll explain to you. It's like this. I think everybody's asking the same point. If chametz is such a bad thing, right? So why do we eat it all year? Meaning, if we're supposed to attain a message on Passover, so why not extend that to all year, right? So the answer to that is that Judaism believes in sending a message, draw out from the message, and then you can have the fruits for the rest of the year. Meaning, the holiest day, what we often say, Shabbos is really the holiest day, but the holiest day that's often referred to is Yom Kippur. Listen, if Yom Kippur is holy, I have a good idea. Why don't we celebrate Yom Kippur all year? That sounds silly, but it's true. I didn't sit. So let's celebrate Yom Kippur all year. Right? The answer is because the goal of Judaism is by via Yom Kippur, right? You should be able to use food. You should be able to use intimacy for the rest of the year in a positive fashion. That's the goal, right? So too, Chametz, the goal of Pesach is to take us to be able to use the Chametz. The message of the anti-Chametz on Passover is to transfer itself that the rest of the year we would be able to take that message. One message is the ego of the matzah. The self-inflated ego of the bread, I mean. Right? And be able to control it. The temple itself, the Beit HaMikdash, operated for the most part in Passover mode the entire year. Now, how is that possible? Okay? There was only one private offering that brought bread in it. Now, when I say bread, remember, and this is fascinating, right? It sounds, we know matzah is flat and crispy. Okay? That is a modern phenomena. In the Ashkenazic world, it's 1,000 years. In the Sephardic world, it's recent. The Yemenites still have matzah. Their matzah is pita bread. Not literally pita bread in the sense of, but the conceptual pita bread, it's the same idea. They take the dough, they roll it as thin as a pita bread, and they bake it immediately. They take the special flour, and they have to have it baked from start to finish within 18 minutes, from start of the dough to the end of the baking, 18 minutes. For Ashkenazim, and for most Sephardim, that would be heretical, because we are afraid that it wasn't baked enough, that it's not baked fast enough, and a number of issues. But there's no question, no one would argue that 2,000 years ago, the tradition was to eat something similar to pita, right? It couldn't rise, it didn't look like a bread, like a challah, but it was some type of flat bread. It was not as crispy as ours. We are afraid that the dough doesn't finish baking. We are afraid of many things, right? And the accepted custom, not custom, the law at our point in life, is that is the way we eat it. In the reason that I'm pointing this out is in the temple, okay, they operated according to basic law mode. That basically is if something start to finish was less than 18 minutes, so they would bake different types of crackers. They would fry in oil. They would do different things that would to us would be heretical, right? To them would be normative practice because they operated based upon the simple biblical principles of which they were more attuned to and more familiar with. We don't operate like that. There was certain exceptions to that. There was a certain amount of bread. First of all, the 12 showbreads that were in the thing was not matzah, but that was not on the altar. The 12 showbreads that was in the holy, right, was distributed to the Kohanim as a Shabbat snack. Okay? Those were breads. That was kept in the holy, next to the table and next to the menorah. Mm-hmm. But that was not put on the altar. Generally, what Al is referring to is that the altar operated in Passover mode. With the exception of Shavuos, it did not operate. There was the two breads of Shavuos. It did not operate in Passover mode. And the private showbreads that were there in the temple when you brought a Thanksgiving offering. There was 40, you brought 40 breads when you brought a Thanksgiving offering, 10 of which were chametz. But be that as it may, our goal is to take out the message of the course. Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know why they pointed out that's true. I also thought that was a lot. I don't have an answer for that, why that's pointed out. Okay.
One more idea?
Yes, ma'am.
I was thinking in the more macro sense, because in Haggadah it says that we're asked to make ourselves feel as if we were slaves leaving Egypt. And, I mean, we have a lot of time to clean and get ourselves out, but it sort of puts you in the mindset that you're getting everything together in a hurry and feeling as if you were slave leaving and changing everything.
Oh, correct. Natalie's pointing out something that I'm trying to develop this year. Is the one of the goals is we're talking about here, part of the cleaning perhaps is to re-experience the slavery, right? I was reading from Rav Scheinberg. Interestingly, Rav Scheinberg, he should live and be well, he's in his 90s, right? So he writes, I read an article last night from him. So he writes, interestingly, he says that, you know, in Europe, there was two types of people. very wealthy people and very poor people. You were one of the two. Right? The middle class is a modern invention. So he says the very wealthy people had big homes and many, many servants. Right? The poor people had teeny homes. So, right, I mean, basically, this is if you read, right, what did they do? In 2 days to clean for Pesach was more than enough time. Basically, you took everything out, you swept the floor, right, and you moved everything back in. There wasn't that much to move, right? It's only in the modern world where we're blessed to have large homes, but we don't have servants. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying that that's just the nature of it. We have much more responsibility over a much larger home, right? So that does create a challenge of getting ready for Pesach. That is a modern problem that is different than of days of old. I mean, we're blessed with very large homes, certainly in comparison to what they had, and certainly much more belongings, right, because of China, right? All of us have so much more stuff than we ever needed, right? So that's an interesting phenomenon.
It's interesting thing you say, this about Sarayas, and they went to Jewish people in Canaan, they sat on the wall, they had walls, and they just took patients to the house up there.
If you want to think about how you're going overboard, if you ever think you're going overboard, there are certain Jewish traditions. There's one Jewish tradition in their culture, they paint the walls every Pesach. That was their tradition. So if you ever think you're going overboard, you should see that. That actually I verified that is indeed the custom of one of the things. I can't remember exactly who does it. Which thing, but I verified it with people. I saw it in writings. But again, that's all in the realm of self additions.
Did we finish the kitchen right away?
Okay. No, we didn't start. Okay. Now the kitchen. Okay. Let's attack the easiest first. The refrigerator. Well, I shouldn't say the easiest, but the refrigerator. Well, the key here is we're looking for it to eliminate two factors. One is we're eliminating any crumb factor, any minute amount of chametz in its essence. And the second is we're eliminating any taste transfer. The rule of thumb is taste transfer can only occur in heat. Okay? So now we'll go through what is the basic accepted traditions per common practice. When we deal with the refrigerator, the challenge to the refrigerator is depending upon what type of fridge you have. The key of the fridge is to get out the crumbs. How do you destroy all of the crumbs? Well, that will depend on whether you have a new refrigerator or an old refrigerator. In the new refrigerators are glass. All of the modern refrigerators that you buy today are all glass shelved. Okay. Any refrigerator of old, or if you broke that shelf, then you can use the old traditional metal shelves, you know, the little wire metals. Okay, the wire metal is almost impossible to get it entirely clean, really, because you know you got all of the cross weaves in it. It's quite difficult. On those, the tradition was to clean it and to cover it, to put some type of a cover on it, so that you're not resting your stuff directly on it. Glass, on the other hand, a glass shelf, once you spray it and you clean it, it's clean. I mean, there's nothing there. There's nothing left there in terms of its actual crumbs. It cannot be. The only thing that you do have to be careful is where, and the newer models are a little bit better, in the lips. When you get to the lip, it transfers itself into a plastic gasket and a metal piece. So those, you really need to take them off and don't look because you're going to be disgusted by what you find, right? But you need to snap those off, clean them, and then put them back. Clean them with a real cleaner. Right, preferably a caustic cleaner in that area, right, and put them back. Right, because there you're dealing with actual food in the refrigerator. Right, now please, when you take them off, make sure you look how they looked before, and you know how to get them back on. Okay, now you may say, well, it's easy. It is not easy. Okay. Right. You have to make sure you study how you got it off so you can get it back on the same way. Otherwise, you're going to need to call Karsten, right, to get it back on. So this is not a joke. Okay, I'm warning you because this is from experience. When I asked it, when I came home and they were all off and nobody could figure out how to get them back on, okay, and the stress of trying to redesign that refrigerator, right? We are some that have never gone on back on until today. So it is something to really take note. But it is important to snap them off because you often have spills. You often have a lot of stuff in there that would be a problem on Passover. So you need to make sure that you get the refrigerator entirely clean. We are going with the tradition that you do not need to cover the shelves of the refrigerator if it's a glass refrigerator. Okay? If it's a metal refrigerator, the thin little weaves, then I would recommend that you put something down on top.
A wire rack, yeah.
If it's a wire rack, then you should put something down on top so that you make sure that it's totally separated and isolated.
So even with glass, with that little part there, you could cover that up there?
It would be preferable to clean it because the problem that I have found is when I snap them off, okay, you have a whole line of chametz lined up inside that whole area. And it's very likely that the chametz is there. It's not unlikely. See, unlike underneath your couch, you don't have to assume that the Cheerios went underneath your couch. In the refrigerator, it's normal. If you know something normally happens under the normal course of nature, it's a little bit, especially since it's right in the area. So therefore, it would be blessed. Again, if you're absolutely obligated, it could be that if you spray it, you spray with the caustic, so then it'll go underneath as well. Yes, you could assume that. I think that would be a fair assumption. Okay. Okay, so that's in terms of cleaning out the fridge. So that covers all of the fridge. You clean it, you wipe it down, and you make sure that you get it clean. In terms of this yes, sir.
Anything in particular about the
freezer? The freezer is the same way. Also, there's no... Also, your ice maker, the ice maker, you clean it out, and you're fine to go. The only thing is the ice maker bucket that's automatically... There you should clean it, right? There you should clean it well, right? And once you clean it well, you could use that over Passover, unless you are the type of person that uses that at the table. So some people take their ice... It depends what design you have. Some people take the ice maker bucket and bring it to the table. That might be a problem. But if your person leaves it in the freezer and you just scoop the ice out of it, clean it out. I would empty all of the ice because you might have spilled in it. Clean it out, and then you can put it back out and use that for Pesach. You don't have to pour hot water on that because it's never used with heat. So therefore, that would be allowed to be used on Passover.
Could you even pour hot water? It's plastic. 90% of them plastic.
Most plastic today is not heat sensitive, to be honest with you. They're not using the cracked type of plastic. It's a different type of plastic. It will survive direct heat. Not in the oven, but direct water heat, will survive.
What about a dishwasher?
Dishwasher we'll get to in a minute.
No, but I mean to put the stuff in the dishwasher, to clean it.
It's not the heat. That particular item doesn't matter. You're just cleaning it with a cleaner and putting it back. It's not the heat that you need critically for that item.
In the refrigerator itself, is there any problem of keeping non-kosher, non-chomet stuff on one level in the place of stuff at another level?
So you're talking about can you sell half a refrigerator?
Yes.
I mean, can you sell a half a refrigerator? Okay. The chametz itself, you're not allowed to own chametz. So the only way that you could have chametz in your house that is not... The only way you could have chametz in your house is where you sell it to the guy. If I understand what you're asking me.
Well, basically you're saying you have to have two refrigerators going.
Are you before Passover or on Passover?
It's a two-part question. One is the selling, and one is it actually okay for the proximity of the chametz with the...
Are you talking about the days leading up to Passover?
No.
Are they Passover? Is it okay to have...
Some you had it right. You caught the question. Can you sell half?
Right. Okay. So there is like this. The question is, can you have chametz in the refrigerator and sell half? Right. So, assuming that you're asking that you're selling it to the non-Jew, that you want to sell half the refrigerator to the non-Jew. So it's a little bit problematic. I wouldn't say it's the end of the world. It is problematic. What you need to do in order to effectively create such an environment is you would need to take a drawer, right, and wrap that drawer in a non-see-through paper, and say this drawer is sold to the non-Jew. Okay?
Well, otherwise, can I store things on my garage refrigerator?
It's the same thing. Again, it doesn't matter where it's located. It's not the kitchen versus the garage. It's not what makes the difference. It's that, can you sell a half of an item? There's two. When we talk about selling to the non-Jew, you need to create two things. I can't say that it's preferred refrigerator trick, because it does seem to be a problem with other areas, but leaving it the more lenient view. But you need to create two things. One is you need to sell it to the non-Jew, and it can't be visible. That's why we create, that's why you put, usually what you do is you have cabinets and you sell, this cabinet is sold to the non-Jew, right on the Chametz contract. These are the areas that are sold to the non-Jew. But you shouldn't have, here, this is sold to the non-Jew, it's sitting on the table.
No, but I've been to people's homes where they cover the Chametz on one whole shelf, and I think that's what Mario's asking. Is that permissible?
Again, if it's the lower shelf, you should choose the lowest shelf, and it should be self-contained, and it should be covered. If you accomplish those three goals, yes.
Wow. Aren't you looking for trouble?
Right. Again, sometimes it's... Right. Sometimes... Right. Right. Again, so if we have it, we have the... Do we have clear? Again, as long as you have an area that's designated for the non-Jew, because what you're doing is you're transferring that area to him. So you have to have a designated area, and it needs to be non-see-through. Now, you have a technical problem. You have to make sure that you can't have that it might fall through, that it might be disturbed.
But it generally can't be touched during...
Correct. It cannot be touched.
You can't open it.
That's correct. The refrigerator you can open.
Yeah, but I mean the area that you're talking about cannot be opened.
Correct. So that whole area needs to be covered over.
Right.
That's why I use the example of a drawer. I mean, I had one year where I had such a problem. I had a similar problem. So, Again, if as long as it's set off, and there's no possibility for any cross contamination and any possibility you'll take it, so then you're okay, and then you mark it. You know, this is sold to a non-Jew, so you're okay. By the way, having said that, I will add many items that we assume need refrigeration, right? Don't so much need refrigeration. I've tested over the years; most stuff will survive, right? We're very, very nervous, but much stuff. Will survive without refrigeration for the course of the 7-8 days. The soy sauces, all these things, a lot of these things that say on it need refrigeration. I've tested over the years. I'm not saying you use at your own risk, but I can tell you I've tested most of the things. They've all survived the test of not having them in the refrigerator.
I don't think I would eat anything out of a refrigerator that sat there for a week.
Because you're very nervous, because we happen to be living in a society. Let me ask you a question, Neil. Eggs. Do eggs need refrigeration?
No.
The answer is that the answer is yes and no. Your eggs that you bring home from Ralph's, if you don't put it in the refrigerator, you're in big trouble, besides from your wife.
Oh, no, okay. We do refrigerate because eggs, but in, I don't
the,
see why.
The answer is like this. That the interesting thing about eggs is once eggs are refrigerated, they must be refrigerated.
So
in America, we've adopted the practice of putting eggs in the refrigerator, and therefore they must be refrigerated. If not, you're going to ruin the egg. In Eretz Yisrael, right? This is the most amazing thing when I went to Israel. I couldn't believe it. Eretz Yisrael, they don't refrigerate eggs, and that's what I learned. That well, they come right. So once you refrigerate it, they must be. Now they have a longer shelf life, obviously, with refrigeration. But once you refrigerate them and you unrefrigerate them, they're ruined. They're gone. So there's certain things. Okay. In any case, we talked about the refrigerator. Counters. An easy one. Counters. Our custom is that we clean all of the counters well, right? And then we cover them. That is the custom that we cover them, right? For a number of reasons, but the custom is that we cover them. There are several ways to cover them. One is you can make little thin counters. You go to Home Depot and you cut out all of the areas. That's what I've done. Right, and then you use them from year to year, and you don't have to waste so much plastic wrap or tinfoil. If you get stuck, if you call Karsten, he can do it for you. It'll take him only about 2 hours, and he can have the whole thing done. It was the greatest move I ever did in my life.
Can I also just note, I hope you don't mind, I asked Charo if she's having any sort of second thought. She says, no, I get to clean. I love this. So I'm just letting you know.
That's how you know she's Jewish. That's how you know she's Jewish. You know what Judah doesn't want
to
clean?
Yes, and everyone. They have to clean. They don't want to clean. She wants to clean.
We're going to hold our group therapy session today from 12:30 to 1:30.
Loves to clean.
Oh, okay. Next. Yes.
If you have a granite counter.
Okay. Now we'll get to the granite.
Can you use
Yeah. Okay, we're going to go like this.
You can use the hot boiling water.
Okay, so I'll tell you the problem is like this. The counters I'm talking about is everything except for granite should be covered. Okay. Everything except for granite should be covered. If you want another way to cover it, that's easy, right? You could use either contact paper. Some people have used tin foil. I will just tell you a trick. If you want to use tin foil that I know from catering, from koshering,
water.
From what I do in the right, what we do in the hashgacha work for the caterers is, if we're not using a blowtorch that day, what we do is we use a stainless steel counters. You blowtorch them because you're panicking. Okay. What we do is you sprinkle water on the counter, a thin layer of just sprinkle a little water. You then take plastic wrap and you put one layer of plastic wrap, a drop of water, and then you put tin foil, and it'll lock itself onto the counter. You'll have no problem. Right, that little trick is a magic. It'll lock itself. You'll see. You'll have no problems. Right, and if you try the what do you call it? Is it locks to each other? Right, the and it stays very firmly. And then what you do is the reason for the plastic wrap is because what you want to do is the tin foil will get dirty. You pull off the tin foil and you put down a new layer. And this is that's how we keep swapping it. Right, as we're going in there in the kitchen, and therefore is you always have a clean counter. Because one of the problems that you have with the counters, unless you put yourself a countertop, which we have now, but the problem is it gets dirty and it gets you crazy.
What about stainless steel sink?
We'll get to sinks. Un momento. Okay. Next. If you have a granite counter, right, then you could take boiling water. What you do is you boil up water and you pour it over the counter. Now, when you pour the water, you should not stop the stream. What are the reasons I'm not going to go into. So basically, you just start taking the water and just start pouring slowly along the entire counter. But don't go, shh, shh, shh. That's not the way to do it. If you just keep going slowly along the whole counter, you'll get the whole counter koshered. Now, I will tell you, you have to be careful. Because hot water is hot. it's a novel thought. It's hot.
Oh, I know.
Now, one problem that they advertised and the person finally retracted. They advertised, I felt bad for Rabbi Eidlitz. This person advertised, right? He was advertising he would come and steam clean your counters, according to Rabbi Eidlitz. Mm-hmm. Now, I myself spoke to Rabbi Eidlitz on this for a while back, and I told him, right, did you say this? He says, of course I didn't say it, because anybody that knows that steam coming out of those machines is not at the halachically viable temperature that would kosher it, right? The only way that you could do that is if you are using an industrial, non-industrial steamer, an industrial hot water gun.
Hello.
Maybe that will work, right? Where it has a backup system that's keeping it at a tremendously high temperature that will burn somebody, right? But generally, you don't have that. There's only one hotel that I know in the whole city that has that, the very old hotel. The Century Plaza is the only one that has a gun that actually guns it at the required temperature. Most of them are much lower because they're dangerous. To be honest with you, they're very, very dangerous. So that would not be acceptable. Just one second. They're harvesting all of the lettuce. Yeah, Yosef, is it an emergency in the middle of the Passover class? I'll touch in a bit. But... Yeah, sorry. They're harvesting all of the lettuce for Passover.
Can iron be used?
Okay. So the problem with the steam iron, what I don't know, is whether or not the steam iron will transfer the water to 212 at that point of engagement. I simply don't know the answer. I don't know the answer whether it does or it doesn't. If someone knows the answer to that question, if it transfers the water to 212 on the counter, then it would seem to be that would be good. I don't know, honestly, whether or not it will work.
Please mention to make sure to move all the little appliances that are plugged in.
Yes. Well, that you got to move anyway, because all those appliances are chametz, so they all have to make their way to the garage in the great transfer. Okay, yes. Okay, so if you're talking about, see, a counter is less likely to be a problem with the 24-hour rule. But we'll get to the 24-hour rule in a second with regard to the sinks.
Okay.
With regard to the sink, there are two types of sinks. There are porcelain sinks and there are stainless steel sinks. In the porcelain sinks, the problem is we assume porcelain to be a earthenware type of vessel, and therefore we do not kosher porcelain sinks. That is the accepted tradition. We don't kosher porcelain sinks. Therefore, right, or we don't assume that they are koshered. And therefore, what one should do is like this. You would clean the sink well, right? You clean the sink very well. If you want to be extra strict, you can pour boiling water all around the sink, right? And then you would cover the sink or use a sink insert, right? A sink insert. A sink insert is either you can buy it at a Jewish store, right? Some of them have it. Once a year you can find it maybe. Or you simply buy a Rubbermaid and cut a hole in the bottom. And that's what I've done for many years. You take a Rubbermaid container, that's a nice size that you like and fits in your sink. You cut a hole in the bottom, and actually I had it down to science. I cut the hole in a circle. I bought a new little strainer, and I had my own professionally built sink. Right. That's one way to do it. Whatever you're doing, you should have, the goal is to cover the sink and to raise it off the floor. So therefore, you should buy those, from Bed Bath & Beyond or something that raises yourself from the floor of the sink. Because when you're covering it, if you're covering down to the base, right, you're really touching almost the base of the sink and the tinfoil tears. So you want to try to get the best of both worlds. If you have an insert, so you're inside of the insert, so you're safe. And that would be the best way to do it.
Will the theory of your water and plastic and aluminum stick with the sink as well?
I've never honestly done it. Last night, someone is testing it today, actually. I told someone to test it today to see how it would work. But I don't know myself whether the sink is the most difficult. It's also the best way is really is to get some type of an insert of some type. If you have a stainless steel, if you're lucky to have a stainless steel sink, then as John just mentioned, you need to leave the sink cold for 24 hours. I mean, you can't have any hot water going into the sink for 24 hours. Then you boil up water, which we'll talk about boiling in a minute. You boil up water and you pour it all over the sink, all over the handles and everything, and that would kosher the sink. So stainless steel sink is the best for your kosher kitchen, more important than the counter. The granite counters are nice, but the stainless steel sink is really a proper way to have a kosher home. I don't have it, but it's something that I would at one point allow.
If you have a porcelain sink, any recommendations on where to buy the inserts?
So if you want the real inserts, Cambridge did have them. Okay. You could try at Cambridge Farms and see. They're basically white boxes that are square. You know, that they are a little bit better than using the Rubbermaids. Okay. I mean, if you can't find them, there's one store in the city that I know has them, that I frequent. So if you want, I'll try to pick you. Last year I picked up for Brana.
Well, what about the dishwasher?
Okay. The dishwasher, in a practical standpoint for a home, I don't see really the need to kosher the dishwasher. And both the need and the halachic permissibility of the dishwasher for several reasons. One is you can only use the dishwasher 3 out of the 8 days of Pesach this year. Right? So you're going to have to be washing the dishes anyway. The second problem is our dishwashers, even if they're made out of stainless steel, all of the racks are not stainless steel. Right? That's one problem. The second problem, and I saw that Rav Gedalia Schwartz says raised the same problem, that there's too many small parts in the dishwasher that food can get trapped in. Right, and therefore, is we have to be choshesh, we have to suspect that you're going to have a transfer. Now, if you're asking me, in the hotels, do they kosher the dishwashers for Passover? Yes, but A, those are different dishwashers. Those dishwashers come apart. These are massive, massive things. And yes, we put people inside of them, literally, right, to see that they're totally clean. And they have they operate a different way, and then we use a lot of hot water blasts to get it fully clean. And change, and then the racks are usually in the better kashrus agencies. I'm not sure saying everybody knows what they're doing, but in the better kashrus agencies, we have new racks going into it. All of the plastic pieces are all new. So that's the preferred way to do a kashering, if the agency knows what they're doing. But I don't recommend kashering your dishwasher for Passover. In general, you should try to live without it.
Also, your dish racks, your drying racks.
Okay. Your drying racks generally should be replaced for Passover as well, yes. You should have new drying racks for Passover as well. Okay, let's go to the oven. Now, the oven is the area...
So no dishwasher use.
Right, yeah. The dishwasher is generally not. But I will tell you, the oven is the greatest ease in the modern world, right? And that's really where we're blessed. I don't know if anybody remembers before the advent of self-cleaning ovens. Okay, before there was something called Easy Off. There's something called Easy Off.
There's still something called Easy Off.
Right. Now, that is a very dangerous item.
Yeah, you can't use it.
Right. You can get very hurt by using Easy Off. Therefore, God, in his kindness, invented something called a self-cleaning oven. And we rely on the leniency that the self-cleaning oven is considered hot enough for the koshering of the oven. Okay? And that's what we've accepted. The only area that you need to clean, if you have a self-cleaning oven, is the door. The frame, the lips. Because the lip does not get clean. And you'll be amazed, by the way, what falls inside. If you open the door and you ever focus down there, what falls into the lips. So there you need to clean, and there you should clean with a caustic. Because some of it gets trapped and you can see it, but you can't get to it, and it's actually crumbs in there. So you should clean your whole door frame, that whole area of the oven, you should clean. The rest of it, you simply turn it on the self-cleaning cycle and let it run through the cycle. Leave your racks in there when you clean it. Even though the manual says you should not leave your racks in there, absolutely nothing will happen to them. The only thing is that they will become slightly discolored, which will happen anyway, by the way. If you're in a Jewish home, right, it will happen anyway. You have to understand, the designers of ovens never anticipated that you would use your oven as much as you do. Right, they're designed for X hours of use per year. That's the assumption, right? They didn't assume that we would leave them on indefinitely or leave them on for 8 days straight, like my oven in the house. Basically, it just operates on from item to item, right? Right. I'm on my fifth repair by mistake when I built it. Just to tell you something funny, we bought a dryer, a washer dryer, two years ago. We needed a new washer dryer. So we went to buy it, and by mistake, we bought the insurance policy, which was the biggest ripoff in the world. It was $150 for each unit, not both of them, right? It was a mistake. It was bought by mistake. We didn't realize that it was line item. It was two, and I had already bought it, and I paid for it over the phone. I didn't think. So Hashem, in his great mercy, he saw to it. We have had on our fifth repair of the dryer, right? This time they had to replace the circuit boards, right? It's because they weren't anticipating that it was going to be used. There's no limit to how many loads you're allowed to do with it. So basically, this ran our fifth repair. So I says, Hashem, in his wisdom, he saw that we had a repair, So
that's why Hashem made sure you had the
insurance policy.
Rabbi, the warming drawer.
Okay. The warming drawer, the problem is like this. The warming drawer is an interesting problem.
Can't use it.
So the... Right. So if you can get your warming drawer clean, which is a problem, because for some reason warming drawers are sheet metal folded.
Right.
So if you spray them and you get them all nice and clean, and you get the top clean as well, so then you should turn it on the highest setting, right? Ideally, you should actually purchase a can of shaving fuel.
The Sterno?
Sterno, and put the Sterno in. Leave the door a little open. Draw a little open and put in the Sterno. Because the problem is you're trying to get a little bit more than you normally operate at. That's not low, whatever reason. You're trying to get a little bit more than you normally operate at. And that's why if you turn it to high, so you're not really getting above where you normally are, right? So therefore, it would be ideal to put in the Sterno. That will get the sheet metal hot enough, and then you'll be okay.
Could you tape it off or sell that to a goy?
Yeah, for sure. Yes, any item in the kitchen that you're not using should be put away, and that will be included in your sale/rental to the guy. We don't actually sell the appliances to the guy; we rent them to the guy. No. We lease the space, and we rent the dishes, and we sell the chametz. The technical reasons why we're not going to go into, but that is the way that the contract is designed for our shul.
Which is now online, by the way.
Right. I want to thank John. He put it. It's fully formatted online, as many of you
anyone
have known.
Anyone can go online and get it.
Yeah.
Anybody.
It's amazing. I would say,
yeah, that's totally to the credit of John. Right.
We just don't use it.
All of that credit goes to John for the.
We don't use it, Lauren. It's just too much trouble. There's no way to get the out of the cracks.
I don't have one.
And it doesn't get
yes.
It.
No.
Yeah. So if you have pets, I'm going to give out a book, and in that book they discuss the pets. Now it is a discuss pet food. If you get stuck, there's two sites. This book has some of them. If you go to crcweb.org, on the CRC's 55-page book, that was one of the things. In there, they have a page. Two pages are dedicated to pets. They actually have a more extensive list. Then Rabbi Eilert prints some of it, but they have a more extensive list over there that lists crcweb.org. Now, I don't read the whole book. You're going to be more strict than I in many areas. So you're going to get yourself confused. I'm just answering you regarding this. For the pet food, you can look there. Now, pet food is a problem because you cannot own chametz. Not only can you not eat it, you can't own it, and you can't benefit from it. So because of that issue, if your pet is eating it, A, you own it, or even if you don't own it, you're benefiting from chametz, right? So therefore, you can't sell the chametz to the guy and feed it to the pet because you're having benefits. So it's a three-fold problem, right? So therefore, you should condition your pet to eat matzah. And over the course, so it says over there what to do. It says over there, they have over there for every type in the CRC one. Rabbi Eilert has it. But in the CRC one, they have exactly how to get your pet ready for Passover.
That's why I don't have pets anymore.
Right. My gosh.
What do you give a turtle?
What? Turtles love lots of
turtles. Lots of insects.
Brandon,
quick
question.
Quinoa,
how do we
eat
it?
Yes
for yes.
Oh.
What?
There those that do use it and those that don't. Any person that needs it should use it.
We need lettuce.
If a person has a health issue, they should use it. If there's a stomach intolerance, tomato should use it. It's not something I would be strict on if you need it. If you don't need it, so then you ought to be strict. Okay. Okay, let's try to go quickly to finish up. So the sink we talked about the oven. Now the stove is like this. The stove, you need to clean the stove and you need to clean inside the stove. The stove actually lifts up, if you don't know. Most stoves lift up, and that's where all of your collection for the last year has gone. In case you wonder what happens to all those spills, the conservation of science and matter, where does all that liquid go? It actually goes, unless you have a hermetically sealed stove, it goes underneath. So that should be picked up and cleaned once a year. That spring cleaning you should do prior to Passover. The grate is what needs to be koshered. The stove should be covered, and then you cut out with tin foil. Then you cut out a hole for the gas area, okay? And then the grate should be koshered in one of two fashions, one of three fashions. If your grates are not perfectly shiny, put your grates in your self-cleaning oven on the rack, flat. Make sure that they're flat, meaning sometimes you have those four metal spokes that lock them into place. Don't have your grate at an uneven tilt when you put it in the self-cleaning cycle of the oven. You put it through the self-cleaning cycle, it cleans it, it does a beautiful job. If it's at a bend, right, so then it'll freeze itself at a bend. When it heats and closes, it's going to be a problem. It'll crack. It doesn't usually crack, but it bends. If you have it flat, it comes out flat. They don't crack. I've tested it on many types of appliances. The only thing is, if yours are shiny, nice and new, right, so it's going to hurt you to have it lose its shine, right? So then now all of them lose their shine. But if it's going to pain you, so then you should put them in the oven. The second trick is... put them in the oven on the highest setting for an hour, right? Not on the self-cleaning cycle, but on the highest setting for an hour. That's another trick you could do. Self-cleaning would be a little bit more preferred, but you could put it in for an hour on the highest setting. The third opportunity for you is that you take a cookie sheet or tin foil. A cookie sheet is preferred. and you turn it on the highest setting for 10-15 minutes, and it'll kick the heat back into the grate, and it'll self-kosher the grate. The reason why I tell you to put it in the oven is because I never like people dealing with heat as much as you can avoid it, because you always have someone who makes a mistake, right? And they melt something. They melt the knob, because if you use a cookie sheet and you have the cookie sheet over the knob, it'll kick all of the heat into the knob and it'll melt it, right? This is from experience of telling people. So therefore, he says, if you put it in the oven, is the safest. I always try to find the safest and easiest methods for people, so that they don't have any danger of burning themselves, God forbid. In our cabinets. So in our cabinets, it really depends. It used to be the tradition to cover them, right? And many people are familiar with that. And if that's your tradition, you should do that. With the advent of I think it's linoleum. What's the white stuff that's laminate? With the advent of the new types of cabinets, I think most of our cabinets today are laminated. They come with that white stuff that's on top of it. Formica. The formica. No. In the cabinet.
Oh, inside.
So inside the cabinet, right? That's similar. Most of them are in very good condition. They're not cut. They don't have cuts in them. And they're very flat and perfectly clean and flat. So once you clean them with Windex, they're clean. So then I don't tell people that they need to cover them. If you can get them perfectly clean, then clean them and that's enough. Clean all of the corners, etc., and that's good enough. If you have the olden ones, if you have wooden ones, right, we have, there's always cracks and gaps in them, then you should cover it for Pesach. Then you should cover it. So it really depends on what type of cabinet you have. The reason partially why we're a little bit more lenient is because generally we don't put food in the modern environment. We do not put food directly in our cabinets. We don't even really put food, for the most part, in our refrigerators, except for fruit. In the fruit drawer. We don't usually put food directly any longer in those areas. The only place where food may touch is really is our counters, or is in our pots and pans, or our sink maybe. But that's why it's a little bit different than might have been in the olden days, and therefore we have a little bit more room, wiggle room, in terms of leniencies. I will add one thing that I do think is necessary. I haven't seen anybody really talk about it. I don't know. Just from personal experience, I really think it's an area that we should be a little bit more strict on. When you bring your food home from the supermarket, you really should wipe it down. Because if you think about it, all of the carts and the swivel belt, the conveyor belt, right? Maybe you should do it for bacteria also, but I'm talking about it for Passover use, right? Is because you're putting it directly down on the conveyor belt, right? And that undoes all of the shelf lining that they put on the shelves. I never understood why you're putting the lining on the shelf. If we put it in the cart and then you put it on the conveyor belt, it undoes whatever they did on the shelf. But okay, it's a nice thing. So you should be aware. It is something that, particularly if that's the direct item that's going to be used in that. For example, a soda bottle would be brought to the refrigerator, right? So you should just wipe down the soda bottle. I think these are common sense things. You should wipe down the soda bottle. If it's something that's in a secondary enclosure, meaning your matzah gets wrapped in another plastic, okay, so that's obviously going to tear out that plastic and get to an inbox and then you get to another plastic wrap inside. Okay, that you don't need to. But that's just something to, that's just a point to ponder, another area point to ponder. In general, I recommend that, dishes, you need to have your own set of dishes for Pesach that's unique to Pesach that we already know. I recommend the tradition already is in America, in the modern world, is to have your own set of glasses for Passover. Even though in the olden days they did kosher glass. In the modern world, I don't recommend it. It's tedious, and according to many opinions, it simply does not work. In Europe, where they didn't have money for food, so I read they kashered glass. In America, we're blessed, we can buy glass from a Cork for, $13 for a set of 52, right? We splurge and spend $13. In terms of silverware, I myself have purchased silverware. It's not worth the aggravation. But you could take silverware as long as your silverware is clean between the blades, which for the most part, most of our homes, we have very, very clean silverware because of dishwashers or because we're using sponges and soap, right? Then what you could do is you don't use the silverware for 24 hours. You take a turkey roaster. You boil water in the turkey roaster. and you drop your silverware in there and allow the water to recapture its boil, right? And then you dip the silverware into water, into cold water. The reason why I recommend using a turkey roaster is because it's the easiest way, because it has a long, it's shallow, so it's easiest way to get the silverware in and out. That's for the most part, we're not koshering too much more than that. There's not that much more you can kosher, so therefore the turkey roaster is the easiest trick to doing it if you want to kosher your silver, silverware or silver.
Is there a mikveh in there? Washing, mikveh?
No, mikveh is something else. Mikveh is for something new. We're not discussing mikveh today. Mikveh is when you want to raise its level of sanctity. Here we're taking something that was already went to the mikveh. Right? Right. But that's a separate mitzvah. Today we're discussing kosher. But again, I recommend, you know, if you visit Big Lots, right, usually you can find a set of silverware for very cheap. Right? That's where I got all my china.
Rabbi, is there anything you can do with the microwave?
Oh, yes, oh good, yes, good, yes. Good point. In terms of the microwave, is like this. First of all, you have to get the microwave very clean. So if you're able to accomplish that, then what you should do is you can't use the microwave, clean it out, wait 24 hours, and then take a glass bowl that also hasn't been used for 24 hours, and you boil water in the microwave. Now, exactly how long that will take depends upon your model. It's very hard. Every microwave works differently. Now, some models have a problem. The fan of the microwave works faster than the heating element. It's sucking out the air higher at a higher rate than you could boil the water. So therefore, you will never have steam in certain microwaves. So what you need to do is you need to boil the water and stop the engine, cut the engine, and then your water will steam. Right? These are just tricks. Steam, because you need to create the steam effect, right, the bubble bath, the steam effect, you know, the schwitz, in order to expunge whatever might be in there.
Well, but you can put in water that's already warm.
No, but it's not hot enough. You need to have it on an ongoing boiling basis to create it. But I prefer, again, as long as it's boiling and billowing, that's good. So you want it to billow and boil. Now, they do say something in these warnings, which I've never seen, but I don't know if it's 100% accurate. I didn't test to see if in Snoop's it was there, but I was warned that sometimes water could have because in a microwave could actually become an inferno. But if you touch it, it won't damage the microwave, but you should always be careful that when you're boiling water, when you take it out, you shake it a little bit, because sometimes it could explode. I don't know if this is true or not, but that's what I've read. To be careful, just as a warning. I've never seen it happen in all my years, but I'm just telling you that that's what I've seen written about.
Make sure you let the glass sit before you put it in the cold water. That for sure will.
Oh, okay. No. The what I talked about. I'm sorry. One second. What I talked about was only silverware, moving silverware from the hot water to the to the cold water. You don't move glass. You don't kosher, so you don't have the problem. I'm sorry, what's it?
How about toaster?
A toaster cannot be done. A toaster can't be done. You have to sell that. No, well, no, you don't need a toaster necessarily. Toaster oven.
I use it for making pizza.
You mean a toaster oven? Toaster oven. So a toaster oven, you would need to purchase a new one. A new toaster oven for Pesach, yeah.
Yeah, usually I put mine
away. The difference is like this. There's two problems with the toaster. I just want to explain the logic why it's like that. There are two problems with the toaster in halacha. One is it's very difficult to get a toaster oven clean. The second reason is the intensity of the environment. The Shulchan Aruch talks about ovens. The Shulchan Aruch says ovens can't be kashered. Because the Shulchan Aruch, you just have to know the world as it was. Their ovens that they're talking about is more like our toaster ovens. They were very closed environments. So the intensity of the environment is much greater. Our ovens are very large and very well vented. Right? So therefore we consider them to be a different halachic status than what the Shulchan Aruch is talking about.
One of the sources I read said that you can kasher the grates of the grill of the oven if you put it on for 10 minutes.
Okay.
Do you not subscribe to that?
Okay, it's not so much that. It was a mistake. They rewrote. I don't know which one you wrote in. I just saw... So this is the OU, what they meant to say, okay? What they meant to say was, I read through the OU book. First of all, the OU book was redesigned this year. I don't think you'll see it again. I sent it out by mistake. I did not realize that they sent it out. It was way too strict than is accepted in many areas, and they left certain things open that it was written more as the guide what I use when I'm studying and discussing it at the conferences with them than really the layman's guide, which was in their book till last year. What they meant to write was that the grill itself, the whole unit, could be koshered after it's cleaned by turning it on full blast. Okay, the grates where the meat is going to rest on, nobody would say that you can kosher that way, right? That has to go through a self-keying cycle at least, or it needs to be used coals, okay? So I read that. It was a mistake. In the CRC, they corrected it. They corrected it. I don't know exactly what was. I read that. I'm not 100% sure exactly how they read it. Nobody would tell you, right? Because the rule is like this. Anything that touches food has to turn red hot. Right, that's universal principle, right? Most of the leniencies that we rely on is because most of our food environment in the modern world does not touch food. Well, most appliances, I mean, does not touch food. Therefore, that's why the pots and pans, we tell people really buy new ones, or you can ask them exactly how to do it, and we're very strict about that. The stove, okay, you'll cover this, you'll put it in the oven. What do you mean? There's no red hot. Your oven, it's not turning red hot. Mm-hmm. Right, the answer is because we're using leniencies because there's no food engagement, right? Whereas in the hotels, for example, the flat tops, I know we don't have them in the kitchens, but there's something called a flat top, which is where it's a large sheet of metal, very thick metal, and it's where they cook all of your eggs on.
The griddle.
Right? So those, in the hotels, we kosher using coals because it has to turn red hot or white hot. Right? We don't have those types of appliances in our kitchen. Right, so it makes it much, much easier. Right, one of the challenges, which I always tell people, and all of the magazines say, be careful, is the stoves that are flat. You know, they all were going this way, and then I don't know, they never took off. But that was a popular thing a few years ago, right? That all of the stoves were flat. You weren't going to have any more grates, right? The glass ones. In halacha, that was a nightmare, because it's created literally a nightmare in law. As to what status it has and how to kosher it, because it's not metal, and it was a big, big problem in law for a number of reasons. But the grates, but there is a way you can use the grill. I don't recommend it because you still have to clean the grill, right? It's very difficult to clean the grill, right? It's easier to go to Walmart and for $16 buy a one that you can attach those little propane tanks on and use that. But if you want to, you certainly, or when somebody buys the house. I mean, I have to do this when somebody buys the house, because I have to kosher it for them once. So what I tell you, what they should do is you should clean it, right, which is not an easy task. Clean the grill, right, and then the grates, you can either buy new ones, right, that's one way. They sell them in all the stores. You can buy them. They're not that expensive. Or put them in a self-cleaning oven. Put them in a self-cleaning oven, and then it'll kosher it. So that would be a way to go. In terms of that, I did find in the grills that we use today, they are far dirtier than is anticipated by some of the times I've seen people discussing the question. Your grill has more food in it than you really realize, right? Meaning, if you take that grease, see the difference is I tried to explain to some of the rabbis when they're consulting, right? That they're answering the question. For example, the way it works in the RCC is. I present the question to the Rebbe Bess, to the Posek, and he answers. The problem is sometimes the person giving over the information has to know the kitchen. That works for leniencies and it works for stringencies. Sometimes they make mistakes, they just don't know the kitchen. Right? They don't know the bugs. I have that problem all the time with the Rebbe. They don't know the bugs, so you can't answer good or bad if you don't know the bugs. In the grill, it's different than the oven. The oven, sometimes you'll have an oven, particularly industrial ovens, that it's black on the inside. Okay, that is not food. That's not even carbon. There's nothing left. It's just the discoloration against the base of the oven. You'll never get that off, right? And you can scrape with your nails. You're going to break your nails, right? It's very hard to ever get it off. That is permitted. That's nothing in law, in Jewish law. In your grill, if you take your finger and rub it up any area of the side of the grill, that black that you're getting is not necessarily pure carbon. It actually has a lot of oils in it, right? That's a bit of it, that's over there because it's resting, it's trapped over there, right?
Like
and that would not be, that would not be permitted because that oil would have the halachic status. It's still edible, right? So therefore, it says the grill is not one that I would recommend. That's the only area that I don't think it's worth it for Pesach. I do tell people to kosher it once when they buy the house, right? Or somebody wants to go kosher and I'm turning over there, I do do it. Because there's, you're not going to have someone go buy another $400-$500 grill for their house, right? But in terms of Pesach, you know, I tell people go buy a, you know, a cheap grill to go travel from. That's the only area where I think it's worthy to be stringent and not to bother with it.
When you discuss sinks, I want to go back to sinks. You didn't discuss faucets.
Okay, faucets is like this. Faucets is like this. You need to just clean underneath the faucet, scrub. people don't change the heads of the faucets, even though I'm not 100% sure why. I personally thought you should. I don't, because nobody else does, but I really think that you should, because our faucets, they pull out, and they actually fall into the food. So they get really, really dirty. But in any case, I don't do stringencies that nobody else writes about. So therefore, but you have to scrub, make sure it's clean, and then you pour hot water on it.
What kind of food would you pull in a faucet?
No, what happens is I don't know, you don't have little children in the house. What happens is that the kids pull the faucet out, and then they take it and they stick it into the macaroni that they're taking off the sink, and they stick it right into the macaroni. You're laughing. I wasn't kidding. I was serious. Right, correct. See, the problem is that if you're years away from little children, you don't even know what's going on. Okay, but in any case, I will tell you a leniency that I did see, a leniency that I got, is regarding the hot water in sink aerator, I think it's called. You know, the hot water that comes out of your sink for your tea and coffee. So even though in halacha, it really should be a problem to use them, But I spoke with Rav Bess on this, so he felt that it was sufficient to clean it and to pour hot water on it, and then you could use that for Passover.
Would that be a problem?
You have two things, and then you also, because you put the hot chocolate underneath it and it kicks back immediately, so that would be a big problem in halacha, but he felt that you don't have to be so strict. Mm-hmm. He said that you could pour the hot water on it and that's enough.
Rabbi, there is some tea that says O.U. Parve from Israel. And then there's another one that says O.U. Parve kosher for Pesach. Is there really a difference between those?
Yes, 100%. 100%. The difference is twofold. One is the flavorings that's added to the tea.
No, I'm talking about just regular black tea.
Okay, black tea, only black tea, orange pokey black tea does not need a hashgacha for Passover unless it's decaffeinated. Okay, all other flavored tea, right, or combinations would need. So if it's just pure black tea, it doesn't need a kosher for Passover symbol. You're correct.
And how about if we have closed, like oil, or I've heard we can purchase milk from like Trader Joe's, and then before Pesach, and then use it?
Yes, so it's like this. Milk is like this. You have two problems with milk. One is the vitamin A and D that's added. And then the second is the utensils that are used to process the milk. So generally, tradition is there are two things that we buy before Passover: eggs, right? One should stock up on eggs before Passover, preferably. And then the second is milk. So if you buy the milk before Passover, in that book, everybody should take one of the books. You need one of these small books because outside, in there, most of the major milk companies are processing their white milk on a dedicated line. The problem is that the milk needs to be processed on a dedicated line, not the line that's doing the chocolate milk. That's the problem. You can get Trader Joe's. I don't know if it's in this book. I don't know where Trader Joe's processes their milk. The Ralph's milk is processed on a dedicated line. The Jersey Made. It says in there the Jersey Made is processed on a dedicated line. The large half gallons are processed on a dedicated line. Toothpaste, it says over there. All of the Colgates are good. All Colgate brands are good.
Maybe you want to go over. Like,
all Colgates are good.
Okay, Rabbi, I have a question. On kitchen, I have one floor. And of course, there's some space and probably crumbs.
Where?
On the kitchen.
Hardwood floor.
Not linoleum, but hardwood floor.
Wash the floor.
Just wash and put vintage something, because it's for sure. Correct.
Yes.
No way I can.
Once you wash the floor.
Who would eat off the floor?
No. You have two problems. It's correct. You have two problems there. Okay. The truth is, on your type of floor, if something falls on the floor, that would be more problematic, because you actively could have chametz there. But the easiest way is to take pine soil and wash the floor with pine soil, and that should get it.
Do you want to go over the cleaning? Because
yes, I'll tell you like this. I will tell you like this. They write here, but it's interesting. They write here, to their credit, they don't seem to write it regarding the areas that I'm talking about. they write here, a tile cleaner. A good tile cleaner is to take a cup of white vinegar with a gallon of water. That tends to get take off the scum. Tile cleaner and vinegar. Vinegar is also good for other times. Anytime you have the white stuff from sediment from the water. Furniture polish is 3 parts olive oil, 1 part vinegar. 3 parts olive oil and 1 part vinegar. That does a good shine to your furniture. Mm-hmm. And then the third one is an oven cleaner. Again, this is just to bake off where you're going to be able to kosher it. It's not in that book. It's to take vinegar and then layer it with baking soda and then to scrub it clean, right, with steel wool, and to scrub it clean. Now, again, be careful. Don't use too much steel wool, or don't use steel wool on a self-cleaning oven. I just want to warn you, because that oven is coated. That coating is what makes your oven. So again, you don't need the oven cleaners only for ovens that are not self-cleaning, or if you're just trying to get the little edges, you know, around, that's fine. But the area that's actually inside of the self-cleaning, don't scrub so hard, because I don't want you to ruin that enamel.
Can I just say
yeah, please.
Okay, yeah, please. This is the commercial cleaning products that we buy, and I use them too. They're full of chemicals that we don't know what effect they're having on our health. We're breathing them and we're touching them, and in the end you can touch them and you might eat them, and they get in our body and we don't know. What we know is that there's cancer like crazy going in our society, okay? And nobody has tested a lot of these chemicals. They're just there. And there are many ways that you can. These are some of them. There actually are more. There are,
how many times find out?
Rabbi, I have the website that people can look at and get a lot of recipes. I don't know if you want to
tell them
that.
Just say it's going to say where the website is so they should know.
It's called Canfei, Canfei, Nisharim, Neshaim. Arim.
Is it Torah?
It's a Torah-based environmental website.
It's
okay,
Torah-based.
It doesn't matter. Your Google will find it.
You have to search a little bit. Go to holidays. You know, somewhere they have like a huge list of eco-friendly. That means things that don't have those chemicals in them, that we don't know what they're doing to us. Recipes to make to do all your Pesach cleaning, basically. Okay, so it's Canfei, Canf, like Frank, E-I, Canfei Nisharim. And you should be able to Google it and find them just fine.
By the trash cans.
Okay. Okay. If we have any last minute questions, again, just to add, we spoke about the milk. Again, kosher for Passover products. Most things today, unfortunately, need to have the KP. The problem is, even honey, that till this year we assumed was pure honey. The problem is that with the world market, what we're having is a lot of our products are becoming adulterated. A lot of the products have become adulterated. For example, honey is being sold today. It says 100% pure honey. And it's 100%, except the word is 100% pure honey. And then in small words, which it doesn't, they omit it on the container. It's honey flavored.
Oh.
Okay, there's zero honey on some of the products that you're buying on your shelf. It's a big problem. This is a universal worldwide problem that we have, you know, from the China environment and from the Turkey, that the honey happened to have came from Turkey. So these are problems. honey in itself doesn't need a hashgacha for Pesach. I've been to honey factories. The problem is that you don't know what you're buying is honey. That's the problem. So it says on it 100% pure honey. This one was from Turkey.
Place that produces honey
right. So
here.
In any case, it would be better for Passover. Right. That one is actually the one that we have seen. But. So again, so generally is, you'll see in the booklet they have different food items, or you can call me or text me. It's always better to text me than it is to try to.
Question on red wine. Okay.
You should see that at the. You should see that it says M E V U S H A L on the bottom. M E V U S H A L. If you look at the wine bottles in the kitchen in the shul here, you'll see they all say it on it.
And that means that it's boiled. And the wine you have on your say the table has to be boiled.
Yeah. It's the safety effect that it brings. It creates a safer environment, so yes. In my house, all of the wine is boiled, yes.
What do you mean the wine is boiled?
When it's made, it's made. It's made under, boiled. It's pasteurized, which is equivalent to boiling.
Because some of the wine is kosher for Passover.
Okay, the problem is like this, is that you want to be able to maximize who can use that wine. That's the issue. The issue is who can use the wine. So it's the problem. So therefore, is in order to create a safe environment that's most friendly to all of the guest attendees, that's the wine that we use.
So would that be dependent on the stringency level some people would or wouldn't use?
The opposite. The stricter you are, the less likely you are to use Mevushal wine. I mean, my teachers would not use Mevushal wine, but anybody that doesn't live in Bnei Brak should use Mevushal wine. If you don't live in Yerushalayim, or you don't live in Bnei Brak, or you don't live in Lakewood, then you should use Mevushal wine. Because Mevushal wine means that everybody can drink it without any fear in halacha. Right? So it's in Passover, it's less preferred, actually, to use at the Seder, but it's more universal. And that's why almost all of, in hotels, for example, we only allow Mevushal wine. Right? Because it allows us to maximize who can use that wine.
Okay, so if I have OU for crossover wines that aren't kosher, then I should not use them at the Seder table.
Correct. I would not use them at the Seder table. That's correct.
Use them for the third night.
Trash cans. Are you getting a nod from them?
If it's the trash cans in your house or the trash cans outside. So if it's owned by the city or owned by the private WM, you don't need to do anything for it because it's not yours. You don't own it. Trash cans in your house, you should clean.
A question. Caesar stone. In the United States, the Ashkenaz, they rule that you can't.
Yes, and then it's so
in Israel,
the majority of the composite is made up of stone, so it should be good.
Huh? In Israel, the body of Joseph said you can use it because...
Okay, Rebbe Vajja in general is more makel. Much more lenient in this area, much more lenient than the Ashkenazi. But in America, we generally don't kosher Caesar stone.
But I'll tell you one thing. We have Caesar stone. There is no... It is totally impervious.
Okay,
there is no way...
It's a halakhic. You can't... It's not a question of whether or not... It's the small plastic composite, the glue composite that creates the Caesar stone, if I remember how it works.
No, it's stone and glass fused together.
Okay, but we are choshesh that maybe glass is not impervious to absorption. Now, Sfaradim would have no problem there, but the Sfaradim hold the glass is impervious.
So
could be if you're going like that, then could be you would have no problem. You should pour hot water on it, and you'll be okay.
Yeah, I mean, I have tested it on myself.
Not a question. You're making a mistake.
No,
it's not a question of its imperviousness. It's a question of its absorption rate, which is a
halakhic. It doesn't absorb anything.
It's a halakhic thing.
No, but I'm telling you.
Does China absorb? How do you know it's a China doesn't absorb? When you wash your China, it looks good as new.
No, but I'm saying if you put something smelly on there and just leave it there, rub it in, when you and you take it off, out. You will not smell anything.
Hi. Hi. So it's nice to meet
nothing.
You.
It, there's no ring. I mean, the only thing that you could possibly damage that.
I have. I apologize. It's sitting on my desk.
Okay,
I told them I forgot it's.
Okay, I just wanted to see if they were useful.
As a matter of fact, in Israel,
okay,
you know what they're making now?
Not a big
they're making Caesar stone sticks. So that because it's totally impervious, I'm telling you, it's unbelievable.
Oh,
the only thing you can't do with it, or you can damage it, it'll discolor it, is if you put, like, say you have a tea kettle, and it's hot right off the stove, and you put it on it, you will discolor it.
You'll make it burn your arc, right?
But other than that, I mean, you drop water on it, it just lays there. And you wipe it off, you leave it as long as you want, you'll never see any, with stone or with a what do they use?
Granite
does absorb. Right. You have to keep it. You have to put you have to put a treatment on it to keep
right.
it from. Granite will absorb.
Right.
When the seeds are so, I mean, we've had it for years, and
right.
there's no way.
I'm not arguing with you. During the course of the year, I think that it may be a better choice than granite.
Yeah, because granite you have to keep on treating every year.
Right. For Ashkenazim, but for Sephardim, yes, it's a very good thing.
So what I do is I pour hot water on it, and then I get Lysol, and I spray that thing and clean it off with Lysol again. And
regards to your husband.
And that's what I do. I clean it with Lysol. It's spray the whole thing.
It's not a piece of paper that I can attach. But if you want, I can always
try
and figure out a way.
Now we have the beauty of it with our stove.
I just know the professional.
Yeah, we have a Viking stove, and it has underneath the grates a shelf that comes out, and all that junk is on the shelf. So you just clean it, and it's done. You know, and then I Lysol it. I use a lot of Lysol on Passover.
There's two ground decaf
piece.
Okay, that says the piece.
By the way, with
No. There's still pizza in the supermarket.
Oh, total. I
folded
not actually.
Right.
But I
so it says it's only pizza. There's more outside.
So there is. By the way, you going home?
That
here?
Yeah.
That's okay.
Give me a lift.
Yeah, they kindly made one in America. Yeah.
Like yeah, nothing. It's totally clean.
Okay.
Anything I send you from the shop can go on unless it's an attachment. Totally clean. You could just hit forward.
So what is actually
MailChimp? There's MailChimp, iContact, Constant Contact. There's a bunch of multi bulk mail senders, and what they are is they're just because your email,
where are you getting
email
it from?
Has a limit on how many emails
where
I can send because
it
takes computer.
Those are all the same.
What
I mean,
about Cambridge?
So MailChimp and all these places, for
instance,
you get a certain number.
So you
of
have to grind it as
out.
Close to Passover as you
can. And they take care
can.
Of all the sending out.
And don't
and they track
it.
How many
so
people
small.
Open it.
See, that's
what
I wouldn't be trackable because I do it
on Friday. So that hopefully more of its pungency.
So if you're copying and pasting,
right?
So if you click forward in
America,
it'll say
that.
That
you, they're talking
about
leaving it open for a day,
it won't
for
save
a few hours, etc. In America,
say it'll
the new modern rule,
perfectly fine.
You can't leave it
perfectly
open at all.
Fine. My question is, sometimes it's deeper than myself. My question is,
it must be either it's an amalgamation. It's an amalgamation.
Virus?
No,
I don't think it's the age. I think it's an amalgamation. Product and not growing,
generate spam, generate anybody like Hotmail, Yahoo.
Father used to make his own.
They would like protect
it's definitely not as strong as the ones that they were using when you're in
your
email.
Totally
great. I don't think it's a problem with the mitzvah.
And if you hit forward, it actually
is. But that's why I grind it. And then I
I'm
seal
just
it
really
right away. You know, the
shulchan aruch
talks about
leaving
it open in order
to
so it's not dangerous. And
the
tri-grading is a little thicker.
Small. And again, I'll just adjust
it.
But I'm just curious because
part
I raised the question.
Part of it is that
other people have the same
explicit
so memory. So I'm curious, using any of these MailChimp,
whatever, or the horseradish that you use by the Seder has to be
deal with the problem
of
not using an attachment.
Right, the one that you use for the fish, you should use your recipe.
But
it
doesn't seem to be a way to...
You're not going to get... it's not going to work. It's not. It's definitely not.
And I'm not
as
saying
as
tasty
when
you send
strong
it to one person,
as the ones that you're buying
in
the supermarket. The
right
ones that are coming from New York.
Right. Right.
It's
different products. It's formatting. There's no.
I mean, I can
right
tell.
Right.
I'm not crying.
Right.
I'm grading this once in a while.
You
can read
that formatting stays obvious.
Sure.
And any, you know, any fonts and all that.
The way they're getting around.
Maybe you tear a little bit. It's like an onion, but nothing more than an onion. It used to be like you
emails.
We have somebody sent from New York.
Yeah, I figured.
There used to be a brand sold out here. We first we called Atomic. And believe me, that was the strongest, other than what my father used to make when I was a little kid, that was the strongest horseradish I ever ate in my life. I could eat. I love hot foods, but boy, I couldn't clean out your whole sinus.
Which is tiny, which is what I don't read it on because it's too tiny. So an iPad, in order to read it on the iPad, it has to be a monthly service. I didn't buy it, but I only bought the one with
a recipe for making your own almond milk.
Yeah, that's like my iPhone.
I'm not going to pay $14 a month just to have an extra, so I have my iPhone. So I've been saying, you said most people will be.
Are they selling it in the stores?
I don't know.
There is,
I'm not debating.
In the next 5 years, service is going to be so cheap.
There is one brand that's being sold in the stores.
There's just going
to
be too many.
It must be made
of Android and everything.
Somebody called me on the phone.
But generally speaking, email is even electronic. You have to be connected to
it.
Yeah, no, it's funny. I guess I'm really different because I'm on Mac. It's so easy. Everything's a desktop and any
but you can make your own almond milk.
The other thing is, the iPad is a special case.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what the statistics are in terms of
time.
People actually
connected to the internet. Or
right. How many people actually buy
the
under
pressure.
I know Apple sells a lot of
plants,
but I don't know if it's half or if it's 25%.
I figure I'm buying them. Why am I going to pay them again to buy something? And I would like it because I can't.
As always, the only bad part about it is
you can't just sit here with my iPad. So if I bring my iPad, I can't just do that.
The other problem with attachments is people have a limited number of megabytes that they get for free.
I said any more elephants.
So if someone gets
attachment, so we're the bargain for
like I know if I get an attachment from someone that I don't know, it gets deleted.
The best you can get is
well,
Ralph
if you don't
has
know
some
the person, you shouldn't.
If
you
don't
know him, I usually pay
a couple bucks for
attachments.
Oh, really?
Because you have 7 gigabytes.
That's
good.
You're talking about the 5 pounds.
No, regular 5 pounds.
That's so fast. Like I know that especially for business, like it's surely.
I got 8-7 crates of
email, and I figure we only get texts once in a while.
I mean, I only need. I don't even think I need 5 pounds. I mean, it's just me. Mayroma can't eat it.
Of course. So let me just understand this.
And it's only, you're right, it's only...
That's like one of the wires that goes into...
It's only 3 days.
...quantity you can use.
Why did mine get going?